Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we live in the era of the spoiled child, right? Kids whose parents are too permissive, so they don't develop the morality or self-discipline to become productive students or grown-ups, or the helicopter parent or tiger mom so controlling that they make all their kids' decisions for them, another form of spoiling. And, of course, there are all those youth soccer leagues that spoil kids by giving them trophies just for showing up, even if their team finished in last place, a national disgrace. My next guest wants to push back on all those narratives. Alfie Cohn, author of 12 previous books, including The Homework Myth and Punished by Rewards, also about child rearing, has now written The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom about Children and Parenting. Alfie Cohn, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
It is funny that we have two pervasive narratives in America today about parenting, and they seem like the opposite of each other. Parents are too permissive, or parents who are too involved. But you see these narratives right. as two sides of the same coin, right?
Yeah, what they have in common, apart from the fact that those charges are made without any supporting evidence, just selected anecdotes, is that both are based on, I think, a deep skepticism about children and an attempt to get parents to be more traditional. There's something deeply conservative about charging that parents are coddling their kids and that kids are consequently entitled and narcissistic and have inflated self-esteem. And on the other hand, that parents are hovering over their kids, not letting them fail enough because they need more frustration and more grit and so on. All of this is really a deeply conservative set of assumptions. But what prompted me to write The Myth of the Spoiled Child is that even people who are liberal or centrist on other political issues seem to have accepted this narrative uncritically, this set of narratives.
Why do you think that would be the case?
You know, after thinking about this for years, I'm still not sure. I think part of it has to do with the pervasiveness of these beliefs. You know, you can tar a political candidate with an ad campaign that denigrates him without any substance to it. You hear it often enough, you come to believe it. So there's something of that. But there may also be doubts about children or doubts about the extent to which we can trust parents to support kids' autonomy instead of trying to manipulate them, that find their way even into people across the political spectrum.
And you say this about praise and criticism, that they're used too often as ways to manipulate kids. How should we praise or criticize our children?
Well, praise is a very difficult issue to unpack because I've been criticizing praise for a couple of decades, but from the opposite direction. My concern with praise is not that we do it too much or give it too easily, that's the conservative trope, but rather that praise, like other rewards and punishments, are used to control children, that they function as what psychologists call extrinsic motivators, that end up undermining kids' interest in whatever they were praised or rewarded to do.
You don't want to praise a child for doing a good job at something?
Well, it turns out that praise, like other rewards, makes kids less interested in whatever they had to do to get the praise. So research shows, for example, if you praise kids for sharing and being helpful, they actually become more self-centered because they've learned that the reason to help is not to make the other person feel better, but so that they will get that pat on the head next time. But here's what's interesting about this. Praise also tends to send the message to kids that they have to earn our approval and our love, that our care is conditional. And psychologists continuously show through research that that's exactly the opposite of what kids need to flourish. They need to know that we love them no matter what, that they never have to earn our love. So the conservative criticism of praise says we should make it even more conditional. We should raise the bar so they have to do more before we pat them on the head. Whereas I'm criticizing praise from the other direction, saying we need to work with kids rather than do things to them. And we have to have goals more ambitious than mere compliance.
Alfie Cohn, author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child. Parents, children, teachers, anyone want to talk back or ask him a question? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You mentioned grit a minute ago with a lot of disdain in your voice. And one of the most interesting things to me in your book is your pushback against the very popular author and TED talker Angela Duckworth from the University of Pennsylvania and her popularization of the word grit to describe an important character trait that kids need to develop as she sees it.
That
so,
she believes kids yes. need to develop, yes.
So let me play about a minute of Angela Duckworth from a speech on grit, and you tell me why you're not signing up for this. Here she is.
I teach at Penn. I see hundreds and thousands of kids pass through Penn's, you know, Ivy League portals, and they have this conception that essentially when they go off into the world, it will be an okay and good strategy to go to law school. And if I don't like law, I, you know, filled my pre-med requirements so I could always go back and do medical school. And if I don't like that, there's always management consulting, the fallback of any Ivy League graduate, right? And what I want to tell them is that, you know, history and psychology tell us that changing around a lot is actually not a good way to get anywhere. The other quality that she isolated in her work, in her sort of reading of biographies, was probably more predictable. I think many teachers and many kids might recognize that, you know, having perseverance in the face of adversity, you know, setbacks, failures, that's important. And it's the combination of those things that I call grit.
Angela Duckworth, found on YouTube on grit. Alfie Cohn, author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child. How much of that do you buy or not buy?
There's a nugget of truth that people who change things every other day may have trouble and eventually need to figure out what they want to do in life. But I think this is being used to advance a disturbing agenda. Elsewhere, Duckworth has made it very clear that she doesn't like it when kids try different musical instruments. They have to pick one and stick with it. And that represents her personal value judgment that a life of specialization is superior to one based on breadth and variety. If you don't happen to share that value judgment, this is not based on research, then you would have reason to question the idea that the main thing we have to do with kids in school, the main reason they're having problems, not the structure, not what they're being taught or how, but the fact that they don't continue to persist at whatever they're told to do. I look in the book more carefully at the studies that she cited, which I find, you know, deeply disturbing and unconvincing on various levels. But I think it's important to realize that this is nothing new. This is the same message we've been given from Benjamin Franklin's aphorisms to, you know, the 19th century chant used to make kids do their homework. If at first you don't succeed, try again.
But let me play. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But I just want to emphasize, besides the fact that I think it's theoretically disturbing, because in many cases, the easiest thing to do is stick with what you're doing, and it takes guts to say, basta, enough, I have to rethink this, and that it's empirically unconvincing, but that it is as conservative in its consequences as it is in its premises, because it neatly pulls the attention away from the structural, the systemic problems that kids and all of us face in the society, and just says, we need to get you accustomed and acclimated and accepting the status quo so you try harder.
One more Angela Duckworth clip on trying harder, on the results of one of her experiments, a grit survey that her lab did on high-level spelling bee competitors. She found, not surprisingly, that they studied many hours a week.
But what differentiates kids who are gritty from kids who are not gritty is not just the hours of work that they're putting in. They're putting the hardest kind of work in. they're not studying the words that they already know. They're not sitting around being quizzed on what's, you know, already pretty much coming easily. They isolate what they don't know. They identify their own weaknesses, and then they work just on that. And that seems to be characteristic of high achievement and of what grit enables you to do. It's basically be in a very uncomfortable place for some part of your day, working extremely hard, and then to get up and do it all over again and again and again.
Angela Duckworth again. Do you agree, at least on that point, you want your kids to be trained to get out of their comfort zones?
It depends. Is your goal to have them fall in love with learning and be psychologically healthy and fulfilled people, or is it to win a contest where you spell more obscure words correctly? The fact is that Duckworth's outcome measures lead to us, I think, a reasonable person asking, what are you inferring from this? In that study, she found that spellers who were higher in, quote, openness to experience, defined as preferring using their imagination, playing with ideas, and otherwise enjoying a complex mental life, performed worse than those who were gritty. What do you make of that? For her, the goal is single-minded, narrow achievement. Whatever you have to do and whatever the psychological and intellectual costs, she thinks grit is a good idea if it leads to that goal. I don't.
Alfie Cohn, author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child, and Mary Nell in Harlem. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Mary Nell.
Good morning. Quick thing is, Alfie Cohn, I love you, and I love it because the parent has to look at themselves and see why we're doing what we're doing, which I love. And Brian Lear, you're amazing because you switch from topic to topic and so smart.
Okay. Thanks.
So here's my story.
Without showing grit about just one.
He switches. Oh, no.
Bing.
I was in the hospital 3.5 years ago giving birth to my child, and this is, for me, the problem with people worried about spoiled children. So I'm giving birth. I gave birth. I shared a room, and a young lady, she was in her teens, had a baby, and her mother came in the room, and the baby, she had just gotten in there. I'd been there a day. The baby is about 5 hours old and in the little, you know, little table next to the bed and started crying. The young lady got up. I'm hearing and witnessing this because there's just a little curtain, got up to pick up the baby and walk it around. And the mother said, you shouldn't do that. You're going to spoil your child. And I tell you, right then, I was about to burst into tears with a 5-hour-old child worried about spoiling our children.
Yeah. That myth has been around for generations that if you respond to children's needs too quickly or too readily, that they'll become too dependent. I think most of us, I hope most of us know better with respect to picking up a crying infant, but that same basic worldview still manifests itself in the way we deal with older children about other things, that if you make them too happy, that they're going to become self-satisfied and narcissistic and entitled. So what they really need is more frustration, and we have to make sure we don't coddle them. We have to make sure that they have to earn everything they get, a sticker or a trophy or a pat on the head or even a sense of reasonably high self-concept. That's what drives the people who give us this this worldview bananas. It's not just that kids have high self-esteem, but that they haven't shown adequate accomplishments to merit feeling good about themselves. That conditionality is one of the key values that I try to unpack in the book, because they present it as being an empirical prediction. If you treat kids too well, if you give a trophy to kids just as a little token for saying thanks for trying, if you let them feel good about themselves too easily, then they will get lazy and they'll be self-centered and so on in the future. And then there's no research to back that up, and when you point that out, they pivot and say, in effect, but they lost! They shouldn't get anything! And then you realize it's a moral conviction driving this, not an empirical prediction.
Kim in Fairfield, you're on WNYC. Hello, Kim.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me. I love your show, Brian.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, I think, Alfie, with all due respect, I love your, it sounds like your book is great. I look forward to reading it. But I just disagree, I think, in the way you're mischaracterizing it. I believe that it's more, the myth is not in a spoiled child. I think the myth is that parents are going to make such a huge difference in their kids and the outcome of their life. I think it's about boundaries. I think it's about respecting each and every individual kid as the person that they're going to be, as separate from the parent. And there's only so much we can do. And to respect that difference is really, you know, to not respect that difference is the problem that our generation of parenting has had, I believe.
Well, there's about four or five very different statements there, one following another, so it's hard to kind of tease them apart. If you're saying you think parents are different from their kids, I agree with that statement. If you're saying that parents need to make sure they don't just try to make kids over in their own image, I agree with that statement. If you think that if you're saying that parents are, in effect, overprotective or over-involved in their children's life, then I want to see some evidence beyond just the anecdotes we keep reading in national magazines to show not only the extent to which that's happening, but why it's happening. It's not that parents are over-parenting necessarily. We really don't. There's no evidence that that's more true today than other approaches are today, let alone that it's more true today than it used to be. But I think we then have to deal with the question of motive. If parents are closely involved in their children's lives, is it because the kids need that and it's a reasonable response? Or is it because the parent needs them to need that, which I agree with you would be problematic? But the excoriations of helicopter parenting and the like make no distinctions along those lines in terms of the parent's motive or the child's individual need.
But are you talking about things like over-scheduling our kids, as some people see that, to critique it by calling it over-scheduling, with all these after-school activities, not a lot of free time to just go out and play, or what we call tiger mom, a phrase I couldn't find in your book, very closely, you know, supervising homework and things like that?
First, tiger mom does appear in my book when I cited a brand new study showing that those kids are in horrible shape. They even end up getting lower grades apart from their anxiety and depression.
Based on what? What parental behaviors are you referring to there?
The ones that are that have to do with tightly controlling children in an attempt to push them to achieve at higher levels at almost any cost.
Okay.
Now, in your question, first, are you saying that some? Am I saying that some kids are overscheduled and don't have enough free time? Yeah, I think that's probably true, especially in upper middle class communities. I think the second more interesting question, though, is are parents overscheduling their kids, where the problem is not just how many extracurriculars they have, but whether the parents are doing it to the kids to meet the parents' own goals? And that's something that I agree is problematic when it happens. But that's not because we're being too indulgent. That's because we're being too controlling and not sufficiently respectful of the child's point of view.
So since you're political, before you go, are there policy implications to your work?
Well, there are in a sort of negative way. The more you focus on these issues and claim that the problem is we're too child-centered in our culture, which I think is laughable, the less likely you are to support policies that really would be child-centered, that would, you know, address the fact that we have a grotesque rate of child poverty in this country, exceeding that of almost any other industrialized nation, that we would look at the policies in schools and the extent to which they're respectful of kids. And unlike Paul Tough, who in his best-selling book, Channeling Angela Duckworth, talks about the need for grit and self-determination as the best thing we can do about poverty, you recognize, I think, how conservative that is, because if the problem is just the kids' attitudes and the need for them to be retrained to be more persistent, then there's obviously no need to look at the economic real causes of poverty.
Pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Exactly. This is what the remarkable thing is, the mainstream acceptance of an age-old right-wing notion That's what's built into the kids need to fail more and show more grit. We need to set more limits and watch them skin their knees rather than helping. Those are the different myths.
Starting at 5 months old, 5 weeks old, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But is there a socioeconomic diversity to your analysis?
There is. So, for example, when you look at helicopter parenting charges about college-age children, it tends to be a one-size-fits-all indictment. Let the emerging adults emerge already. Stop looking over their shoulders when they're away from home. But the reality is, a new set of studies in 2012 found that a lot of it varies based on class and ethnicity and even gender. So, for example, young adults who are the first in their families to go to college tend to need much more support from their parents and others. And those who are raised in an atmosphere where interdependence is valued, not just independence, are ill-served by a worldview that has more to do with making kids self-sufficient as soon as possible, and parents who try to connect with and help their kids are disparaged as being helicopter parents. It's one more example of how a particular narrow view is imposed with a very broad brush, and it doesn't serve kids well.
Alfie Cohn, K-O-H-N, author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And up next, that firestorm that Michael Lewis created this week with his new book on high-frequency trading. We will step back and explain what that is and what Michael Lewis and the people he wrote about have wrought. Stay with us.